Hello, it's Christine. I'm sitting with June and Patrick Savage because they've got a project that they did, which is very near to my heart. And Eric Blumeyers, you're the listener rep for the Talking Newspaper. You will have seen this particular thing. We're going to talk about Reap's Cross. Now, June, your walkers like Eric and myself, yeah, and you and Patrick, what happened?
Well, in 1998, we were walking from Raystrick Greave across back home to where we lived then in Edgehay Green, and we were talking about the things that the Victorians and the buildings they put up, and saying, talking about the modern architecture, etc. And unusual for us having a philosophical conversation. We came across Reap's Cross, which had a base and about a third of it still standing and the rest of the cross laying on the ground. And we stood there looking at it and said, well, can we do something about this? Can we mend it?
Oh,
so
can we mend it? this listen, is a cross that's higher, it's about 5 foot, is it?
Yeah.
5 foot high?
No.
11 foot six.
I've reduced it, right. Yeah. 11 foot six high and made of stone.
Yes.
Yeah? Made of stone. And we think that it was probably one of the route markers. Now, our listeners will know about Limmersgate and Saltersrake, which were the old trade routes taking salt and lime between Cheshire and Colne. Colne was the big administrative place. Colne had the limestone. And we think that this was one of the... Well, in fact, Patrick, next to this Reap's Cross, Jeff Boswell found something, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Jeff did follow this project quite closely and he wrote a number of articles. And I was quite surprised, actually, that he told me about a marker stone, which is in the ground, only about 400 or 500 yards from the cross, which not many people know about because you've really got to search for it. It's down in the grass. And when you look on it, it's got CLN, that means cone, because he used to spell it that way, 6 miles. But in fact, Jeff has told everybody, that, and he's quite right to say, that in fact it is in 8 miles from Colne. It says six because that's before 1596, when the statute mile as we now know it was introduced into this country. So people had different measures at that time.
And of course, Limmersgate and Saltersrake were pre-1500. Mm. We think probably pre-Roman, you know, really. There's a lot of trade. And they used the high ground, didn't they? Because the valleys were so marshy.
Yeah, I mean, the cross itself, that although Limesgate, they predate the cross. Cross was about 1400s. So, but it fits in with all this long distance past, doesn't it?
Yeah. Right, June, you had the idea.
We had the idea.
And then you went.
And then we were talking down in the New Delight with friends who come from different parts of the valley. And we're talking about this cross and everybody got very excited and started to chip in about what they could do.
Because the year that you were talking about now was about
1998.
This was 1998, but it, as you said, June, it became... the idea was a millennium project for the year 2000 to put it back together.
So this is the New Delight, all drinking together, all pals.
Friday night.
And after a few pints.
After a few pints. And, oh, we can do it. We can do it.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. Yeah.
So, all right, what happened then? Once the beer has settled...
Well, it got a bit serious, really, because people got very excited about the prospects. And we all went onto the moor one Saturday to have a look at it, and that got even more people interested. So the whole valley knew about this project, but there were some key people who were there on every Friday night who kept coming up with ideas of how we might put this cross together.
And, of course, one of the key people was the landlord of the New Delight, who had been a Rolls-Royce engineer with his wife, my friend Carol, who neither is living now, unfortunately. And I think he was helped to drive it, didn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, Vic Dearden was very central to it because he came up with the idea that he could get a large steel rod, which was about, well, it's about 4 foot, the rod. So if I tell you the cross was 11 foot six, you can see we were going to put this rod, drill the holes on both sides of the cross and put it inside the cross and hold the cross together. And he also came up with the idea that we'd get some special resin because the steel rod wasn't just a steel rod, it was doweled. It had a screw sort of circular cutting into the rod, and the resin could be poured down through the curves in the steel rod and would help the rod to hold the stone together much better. So he came up with all that.
Modern engineering.
Yeah definitely. Yeah, great idea.
Yeah.
And there were other people in the pub. There was a chap called Graham Walker, who lives up at Dry Soil, Blackshaw Head, and he was a slinger down in one of the local factories.
What's a slinger?
He was the man who, when stuff came on lorries, big heavy stuff, whether in the old days it was cotton, but then it became other sorts of items that they dealt with. He had to offload the lorries by small cranes and onto a forklift truck. So slinging meant you could put usually rope and felt loops around things to move things.
A bit like a hammock, I suppose, is
it? Yeah, and therefore we knew how heavy the cross was, so we did need to come up with some methods of how we might lift. First of all, lift it off the ground and take it off the moor. And secondly, how on earth were we going to get to put it back together? Because we actually put it back together on the moor, having cut it in a local quarry. So that needed quite careful lifting gear to do that.
But my memory of the moor, I haven't been up there for a while, like probably Eric hasn't been up there either. It's just moorland. It's very, very rough ground, and with a lot of bog. There used to be a lot of bog up there. And you can't get machines.
No, well, this was... But we did find a patch of ground from the waterboard path that came at an angle back towards where the cross was, which we reckoned in the middle of summer. And we did take the cross off in summer and put it back in summer. The ground, if we picked a dry period, we could get tractors across there. And in fact, that proved to be the case, and we did do that.
But waterboard, that means you need permission. What? Come on, what happened?
Oh, crikey, talking about permissions. This was a... I mean, you know, the actual exciting bit is putting the cross back together, but there was quite a long, boring bit, really, which I myself was involved in, which was getting permissions from all kinds of people. The water board owned the land, and they were very, very supportive of the project. And in fact, they did put a small amount of money up to help pay for some of the materials and things. So they were really good. And, obviously, they got some publicity out of it, but they did do it because they thought it was a good thing to do. Savile Estates, which you may know, own vast amounts of moorland in the area.
That's Boundary Mill owner now, isn't it? The Bannisters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And anyway, the Savills, of course, had shooting rights, and therefore we had to avoid taking the cross off and putting it back at key times in the year, in spring when the nesting season for birds like the curlews were going on, and then of course the shooting of the grouse from late July, August onwards. So we only had a small window, mainly between the end of May and the beginning of July, when we could do this, either taking it off or putting it on. So anyway, we got the permission of the Savile Estates. And we also had to get the permission of the West Yorkshire Archaeological Society to the design that we were going to cut the new stone to.
Because it's a heritage thing, isn't it, the cross?
It is. I didn't realise that crosses have numbers. But all national monuments, you know, whether it's, you know, St Paul's Cathedral or Reach Cross, the number of Reach Cross is 23383. And if you go and touch and change a national monument, you can't do that without getting permission from the Secretary of State at that time, what was the Department of Culture, Sport and Media. And now we had to go about doing that, but obviously the main permission that they if you like, sort of set it down to, was English Heritage, who were the body who worked for the Secretary of State. And English Heritage Yorkshire is based in York, and they were fundamental in terms of what we could and what we couldn't do. So lots of permissions.
June, this sounds like a lot of letters.
It was. I had to do a lot of typing, a lot of letters. Patrick dictated them and I rattled away.
And kept all the things.
Oh, we had to keep records of everything, yes, of everything that we'd done, and then report back on Friday nights back to the pub.
Right, where you got various specialists in various things, hadn't you?
Yeah. And they were obviously get frustrated. Not with me, but they kept saying, Patrick, when are we going to take this cross off? And I said, you can't do it yet, because obviously we had to get all these permissions in place.
So you started in 1998.
Yeah.
Yes, and then you got all these permissions in place, and you got all your various helpers. You got farmers.
We had farmers who got tractors already, and everybody was ready to do it. The one crucial bit that delayed us in 1999 was the fact that... obviously, Jim Galt at Stonecraft with his quarry and all his cutting equipment, which he kept on the quarry, which is near Jumble Clough.
It's just up Jumble Hall, isn't it?
Jumble Hall, yeah, at the top, yeah, of there. He was the key man, but the authorities at English Heritage only wanted people repairing this cross who were on their list of architectural masons. And we said, well, we'll only go ahead with this project if we get somebody who knows what they're doing with the local stone, and that's Jim Galt. So in the end, and it did take about 8 months for them to change their mind and say, yeah, we'll allow him to do it, subject to him telling us exactly what he's going to do. So that delayed things. And of course, by the time we then got round to, we took it off in the year 2000, but then there was another delay while in 2001, while we, to the end of 2000, beginning of 2001, while we waited for English Heritage to specify to Jim Galt how he was actually going to cut the stone. And then lo and behold, as you probably all remember, we had the foot and mouth in 2001 and nobody could go on the moor. So the whole thing was put back then. And that's why it didn't get put back till 6th of July 2002.
You told me about a really critical moment where you and Jim Galt were together, and you
In the middle of all this,
bit twitchy.
Well, when we knew what we had to do and how to cut it, because basically we had to cut part of the stone because obviously it broke and it didn't break in a straight line. And the English Heritage were quite happy for us to put a new piece of stone, because the one thing we couldn't do was reduce the height of it. So if we cut off the bits that were broken, we had to put a new bit back. And the cutting of this stone, I got a phone call on a Saturday dinner time. It's pouring down, I remember. And this would be in the year 2001. And... It was kind of March time, it's cold. And Jim said, you better get over here, because there's no way I'm going to cut this stone without you being here. Because obviously he needed a witness. He wasn't going to just do it by himself. Oh. So I stood there while he got this massive blade, which the actual cutting blade is probably 6 or 7 foot diameter. And it cuts straight through the stone at the required points.
Amazing.
I just watched.
Amazing. He's amazing. A very, very skilled stonemason.
Fantastic, yeah.
And an extremely good rock climber as well.
And also, of course, he great bass guitarist for the local group Outer Zeds, his rock group, which plays at Blackshaw Headfate and lots of other local venues.
So you've got this thing cut, and you've got all your helpers. What did Tex do?
Well, Tex Reed, he was the man who had one of the big tractors, because clearly once we decided, once we cut it and we decided how it was going to be made, we had to put the bottom part of the cross in place. It actually fits into a very large rock boulder in a slot. So we put it back in its slot, and we had to pack the bottom of this base with... Jim Galt had got all this slate, which we packed it with. And then we put in the metal dowel rod, which I told you about earlier.
This is Vic's
Vic Dearden's thing. Yeah. And we put the resin down it. All this is done on site on the moor. It was a nice day and it was dry for once, so we could do it. And then Tex with his tractor and Graham the slinger had to lift up the top part of the cross. And of course it had to go a lot higher to get above the metal dowel. And the hole that we drilled in the top section was then lowered onto the metal dowel and down onto the bottom section so it fit together again. So that took some doing.
I'll bet. You wouldn't be on stable ground, would they?
No, we weren't.
The ground that these machines were working on would be moving.
All over the place, yeah. That's right, yeah. It was very tricky.
You got a lot of press coverage and things like that, didn't you? There's a cutting, newspaper cutting.
There was lots of articles in the Yorkshire Post, all the local papers, obviously. And, of course, the Calendar News, Yorkshire Television, came and filmed the actual putting back of the cross, and they showed excerpts of it on a number of their news bulletins through that the following week. So it was everybody's very excited about this, yeah.
Except for one farmer.
Who remained nameless, who I had to persuade a lot about putting, although it wasn't on his land, he thought a lot of tourists would come up and have a look at this cross and he didn't want people roaming about the place. And on the actual day we put the cross back, one of the newspaper people met this farmer on the track and asked him where the cross was. And he told them that we weren't putting it up that day.
Oh,
so he did stop one newspaper running the story.
Oh, he's naughty. anyway. No names. Oh, right. So you started in 1998... 2000, it was the millennium, a millennium project, and you finished 2002.
6th of July, 2002. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And we have a, if you go and look at Reeves Cross, there's a little plaque on it.
Which Vic did.
And Jim Galt made sure it was pinned into the cross. It's still there today. And it says Reeves Cross, re-erected by the people of this hillside. I must tell you, there is a mistake on that sign because it says REAP, apostrophe S.
Oh!
But, of course, I didn't see that till the day it was put back up, so that it doesn't belong to REAP. It's REAPs, as in reaping.
And, yeah, apostrophes should be banned.
So that's an interesting little quirk of the cross.
Right. And didn't you say there were some pound coins?
Oh, well, people got that excited. They thought they should leave the mark on the cross when we put it up. So as there was a big tractor that people could clamber over, onto, they could put things on top of the cross, which they did. So I don't think it'll get anybody rich, but there are some pound coins stuck to the top of the cross.
Right, Eric Myers, get your running shoes on and get out there. You've got a load of money for you. Right, June. You're on out on a walk and you see a cross leaning very dangerously.
I don't think I dare. I don't think I dare. What would you say, Patrick?
I'd say, I think I've done my bit. No, somebody else could take it on. Sure, I enjoyed it, but so much hassle. Not in putting the cross up, but with all the authorities. So I think that's my first and last cross.
Magic. I'm so pleased you did it. It's a great community project. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Right, thank you very much, June and Patrick.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye from Christine. Bye-bye.